This is Dave from Level the Playing Field Podcast. Thank you for joining Jeff, also known as Podcast Father, on this journey, sharing great things content creators are doing. He's the indie podcaster.
You've been searching for a podcast. Want to know about some great artists? You've come to the right place. Indie Podcaster, with your host, the Podcast Father.
It's going down in indie podcaster land because you have arrived at your destination for another episode of Indie Podcaster. I'm your host, Jeff Townsend, the Indie Podcast Father, continuing the effort to stand up for the little guy and the little gal, the indie podcasters. That's what I love to do, and that's what I'm going to do again here today. Hope you guys are doing well. I've been crazy busy between this and work and family, and then the addition of Podcast Garage with my good friends Tanner and Greg. We'll just start out with that. So hopefully by now you've checked out Podcast Garage at podcastgarage.fm. If it's something that it sounds like you want to do, do you want to get your podcast to tune up? Do you want to sit down and brainstorm ways to make your podcast better? It's a good option for you. But for today, I'm going to introduce you to Jeremy Enns. I actually met Jeremy a little bit, I don't know, probably a couple months ago on Twitter. And I really enjoyed conversing with him and getting to know him. He's got a really good podcast mind. He's involved with, let's just call it the umbrella of Counterweight Creative. He's got a lot of different things he goes by under that Counterweight. He's a very creative guy and is a good person to interact with and check out his content that he creates. It will help you improve as a content creator. I had a chance to catch up with him in his busy schedule. He's actually in Mexico City. He actually does this thing where he gives these quick tips for content creators. It's a great piece that he does every weekday. We'll get into some of that in this podcast episode for you to check out. Well, let's just cut out all the BS and jump into this cool conversation that I had. But before we do that, we're going to take care of a little business. Seriously, this podcast would not exist if it wasn't for the awesome love that you guys show me in the content creator community. If you're not in contact with me and you would like to be, or you'd like to be featured on this podcast, you can go about this in a couple different ways. If you just want to chat with me, hit me up on Twitter at @podcast_father. Hit up my website, podcastfather.com. There you will also find a form that you can fill out to be featured on this very podcast. If you really love what I'm doing, you know, I just would love it if you subscribe to this podcast. If you'd hit up some of the Patreon, Buy Me a Coffee, PayPal options at podcastfather.com, you could leave me a review on your favorite podcast listening platform. I'd be thankful. I'd love you. I'd appreciate it. I'm going to share some sponsors with you. They do help me keep making this podcast, but more importantly, these are great tools that independent podcasters should be using. PodPage. You can build a beautiful podcast website literally in less than 5 minutes, guys. It's amazing. It uses your RSS feed and it automatically creates all of this. You can customize it and do all the different things you want to do. There's all sorts of different packages. You've got to have a website if you're a podcaster or a content creator. You have to go to podpage.com, use my code FATHER. This will get you $20 off any pro package. One of the big challenges for new podcasters is marketing your podcast. Do you need help doing that? Well, I've got the solution for you. My friends at PodSpike make marketing your podcast easy, affordable, and effective. They work with you. They pull the legwork. They connect you with all these different resources that you get to choose from. Go to podspike.com, use the code IndiePodcaster. You'll get $20 off your first month of a pro membership. As a podcaster, it's very important to make sure you got a transcript going on for all your episodes. It really is. And my friends at Podden have the ultimate tools to do that. Make your podcast an eye-catching transcript with ease. You really need to get to it. Go to podden.io. All right, let's get into this conversation, which happens to be powered by Riverside.fm. Jeremy, man, I appreciate you taking the time to talk to me today. I know you're the busiest man in the world. We were just talking before we hit record here. We were trying to figure out how we met each other. Of course, it was on Twitter. That's a given. Anyways, man, thanks for joining me.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me, Jeff. I feel like I've been getting way more into Twitter in the past 6-9 months, and I feel like everybody I meet now is through Twitter, which I used to think like Twitter was, there's not a large community of podcasters on there other than people just like sharing their episodes and that was it. But I feel like in the past really like three to six months, the Twitter kind of podcasting space is, maybe I just tapped into it and met the right people, but it's been awesome.
Yesterday was my, by the time this comes out, it won't be relevant, but on the 15th was my 10-month Twitter anniversary. Mm-hmm. I always heard that about Twitter too. Like there was no real value in it, you know, for podcasting. You should have one, right? Just so your audience can talk to you, blah, blah, blah. But not as soon as I got on, kind of, I'm not going to say I created an independent podcaster community because that's not necessarily true, but definitely proved that there is life in it. So no, I agree with you 100%.
Yeah, it's interesting. Like Twitter, and I think a lot of podcasters probably when it comes to Twitter, I didn't understand how to use Twitter. I had an account for 5 years or something and only last year really started to understand it. But I think the thing for me was like, what clicked was like, oh, it's not about posting content. It's just about engaging with other people's like existing conversations. And like, once I made that mental switch about like, stop trying to like promote myself and like post stuff to blog posts or podcast episodes or whatever, and just like talk with people, I was like, this is actually really fun. Like, and now I've met some of like my best friends now through Twitter, just through conversations and stuff like that. So it's a kind of like magical platform almost.
The beautiful thing is once you realize that and you do that, then you can actually post content. Then you can. Right. Once you focused not just solely on that, then it actually becomes valuable. And we'll get into that. You do that all the time. But anyways, I want to give you a minute to introduce yourself, man.
Yeah. So my name's Jeremy Enns. I'm originally from Canada, but have been doing the remote work kind of traveling thing for the past 5 years. Actually, as we're recording this today, we're on February 16th. My girlfriend's, it's her 6-year travel anniversary. We've been together coming up on 4 years. So she's got like 6 months on me on the travel side of things. But we're currently in Mexico City. And really, I started my podcast production agency to be able to have a remote kind of friendly job and be able to do the online business thing. And so that's kind of been doing that for pretty much the same amount of time coming up on, I think my 6-year anniversary of the business, the production agency, is next month. So kind of came into it through the technical audio engineering side, which is what I went to school for. And then over the past 2 years, 3 years, have got way more into the marketing side as I kind of like realized that production can only get you so far for our clients. There was kind of like, you know, half of them were doing really well and their shows were growing. Half of them were kind of like stagnating. And I just started getting curious about like, okay, what are the ones that are growing doing? What are the ones that are stagnating not doing or are doing? And then kind of out of that, just became entirely obsessed with marketing. And now it's one of my favorite things.
Yeah, it's definitely a skill, but it's something that can be learned. I mean, you just said that. And I think that's like, some people are just so intimidated by it, just so damn intimidated. They don't think they can learn it, but there are things we can all learn. I mean, I've done it for a while, for a career. I did it for a while, but I mean, everybody can learn it. You really can learn some things about it.
Yeah. And I mean, like I came into it from like my background. I got into audio engineering because I was into music and I was into like heavy metal and hardcore music where like selling out is this just like terrible, like the last thing you want to do. And it feels like marketing is in line with selling out. And so I just had all the creator, classic creator, like ideas of what marketing was and how it was dirty and slimy and sleazy and like not something
I want. Classic indie creator.
Yeah. The indie creator. Yeah, definitely. And it was, I think for me, it was just like reframing it. I actually started to find some people who I looked up to who were marketers and I like liked them as people. And I was like, oh, like good people that I like are doing marketing in a way that I like. And I was like, oh, there's a different kind of marketing that you can do. And that kind of like, as soon as the door opened for me, I was like, oh, well, if I can do it that way, then of course I want to learn about this. This is going to help me get my stuff in front of people who it can help and who like, you know, can grow my audience and like can create community and all this stuff. So I think for me, it was just like that reframe was really just looking at marketing as building relationships with people who were into the same thing I was into. And once I did that, I was like, oh, I can do that all day long. Like those are the people I want to talk to. And like, that's kind of what you do through this show is like, talk with indie podcasters. And like, that's like a form of marketing kind of, it's like building relationships with all these people who are into the same thing as you and everybody kind of benefits from it.
Yeah. Networking branches off to everything, including marketing. Mm-hmm. Let's take a step back, man. Tell us about the production company, what all you're doing and you're involved in.
Yeah. So like I said, I started that coming up on 6 years ago and started out as a freelancer and kind of within the first year or two started growing quickly enough. It took me 6 months from, I was still working a full-time job and took me 6 months to go full-time on the, well, at that point as a freelancer. And then over the next year, started to get enough clients that I needed to hire people on. And so it was turning into an agency. I didn't even know what an agency was at that point. And it was like, I probably like hired 3 people as contractors. And by the time I like actually understood that what I was building was an agency and all of a sudden everything clicked into place. And I was like, oh, there's like a roadmap for this. Other people do this. I know, like know what to search in Google for like how to do, you know, X, Y, and Z for an agency business model. So kind of like blundered my way through it early on. And at this point, for a while, we were like quite heavily niched in health and wellness shows. And that was mostly through referrals, where almost all of our clients came from. And I was lucky to get one person who I met at a conference early on. They referred me to one of their friends who became a client. And then between the two of them, just referred tons and tons and tons of people. So I had no background in health and wellness and not like an interest in it other than, you know, as a normal human wants to be healthy. But of course, all of these are like super niche shows. Most of them were like very like women's hormones, health and wellness. And so I've learned so much about women's hormones and all of that kind of stuff through our client shows, more than I ever thought I would or even knew existed. And so that's kind of where we still are. A lot of our clients are still in that space. And we still get referrals in that space. I kind of leaned really heavily into that niche in 2020. And I started a podcast called Build a Better Wellness Biz, designed to appeal more to that audience. And I kind of figured like, okay, we can be the number one production agency for health and wellness creators, brands, whatever that might be. And I think that probably was like a very realistic goal. But in creating the show, I kind of realized like, oh, I'm personally not like into this. Like I don't, creating a podcast is, as everybody knows who's listening to this, there is so much work. And so I write a newsletter. I write two newsletters, but I write a weekly newsletter called Creative Wayfinding, which I probably spend 8 hours a week on. And so the podcast was also taking another like 8 to 10 hours a week. And I was like comparing the two. And I was like, the newsletter is like where I get so much energy and like life from doing that. And I just wanted, if nobody ever read it, I would still write it every single week. Like it doesn't even matter about the audience. I get so much out of it. And the podcast just felt like this like great strategy that felt like a slog. Like I was pushing a boulder up a hill. And it just became apparent like, I've got to follow the thing that like, if I can't do both of these. And so I got to follow the one that's actually like, I find fun and enjoyable, because the podcast's not going to be successful if it feels like this kind of stress or pressure or like a chore doing it now when I was just, you know, the first few months in. And so kind of like after I ended up shutting the show down after 30 episodes and 6 months in, and then kind of backed off of the health and wellness niche as well. And was kind of just like, okay, this, if it was true for the podcast that these aren't the people I want to speak to, it's true for the business as well. And so like, I got to get clearer on who that is. And so kind of pulled back a lot of the messaging around that niche. And to be honest, like around that time, I'd started a course earlier in 2020 called Podcast Marketing Academy, which was like, I was having just so much fun creating. And it was basically taking everything I'd learned about marketing for podcasts and put that in that course, and realized like, oh, I'm kind of, the agency is pretty heavily systematized. I spend like 5 to 10 hours a week working on it. And I was kind of like, okay, do I grow the agency now? Or do I try and make this like creator business as a course creator work? And it was kind of this decision where I was like, same thing happened with like podcast versus newsletter and course versus agency. I was like, actually, maybe I'm not going to focus. I've been building this agency for 5 years, but maybe I'm not going to like focus on adding more team members and like getting way bigger clients and adding more services. Like, maybe we just keep it going the way it is. And I put all that extra time and energy I have every week towards the course and the creator business, and, you know, focus more on my writing and more on the, you know, the big course and smaller product offerings. And so now over the past kind of 2 years, or I guess more maybe the past year, I kind of made that decision at the start of 2021 and was kind of like, okay, the agency, I'm going to keep serving our clients well. And if new people are coming in, that's great, but I'm not going to really lean into marketing it. I'm not going to actively try to grow it. And it's going to be like all in on the course. And so I'm kind of in that process of, I think what probably a lot of listeners are is, you know, trying to go full time on the creator side of things, which I know I have a lot of like privilege in having built this agency that now I don't have to spend that much time working on. So time-wise, I have a lot more these days, although it often doesn't feel like it. But I think that that's where I'm at. And I know probably a lot of people can kind of relate to that same thing.
What's the name? Did you say the name of the agency?
I don't know if I did actually. It's called Counterweight Creative.
Okay. So it's still Counterweight, just like the...
Yeah. Everything's still kind of like under that umbrella at this point. Although I feel like at this year, I'm probably going to start splitting things out into more of their own brands maybe.
Yeah. It's like, how do you do that, but yet stay like true to the umbrella, as you put it. Yeah. Yeah.
Yep.
You have probably heard of promo swaps with other podcasters, but have you heard of feed drops? Feed drops are when one podcaster plays an entire episode of another podcast. The idea is for the listeners of the show to experience an entire episode before they decide if they want to subscribe. I'm going to tell you what, this is way more effective than promo swaps, and I have the perfect person that can do this for you, my good friend Greg at Indie Drop-In Network. Indie Drop-In Network is a network built around feed drops. You submit an episode, and if approved, it appears on one of Indie Drop-In's shows with all your contact details in front of established audience. Best of all, it's free. So if you are a true crime, paranormal, scary, or comedy podcaster looking to find new listeners, consider doing this. I've done it, and I can tell you it does work. What the hell are you waiting for? I should probably tell you how to do it. Maybe that's what you're waiting for. Go to indiedropin.com/creators. I'll say it again. Go to indiedropin.com/creators. You're damn right. Dang, that felt good. How important, like, was it for you when you, the actually podcasting part, as far as validating it and learning that as you move forward with what you're doing?
Yeah, it was really interesting. So that wasn't my first show. I've created some shows like for brands before where I like hosted it, came up with the concept, did all the interviews, like did everything. And I had like one of my first shows, I think it was probably my first show, was like a fun, it was a show about, so we kind of like the, well, not the tagline, but the premise was, it was an adult rated show about ice cream. And it was two friends and I in Vancouver, and we would like go record live on location at a different like craft ice cream shop every week, and then go back to one of our places and like talk about the ice cream. And there was like my one friend, Kevin, he was just like, he's just like the potty mouth of the group. And so we just kind of like turn him loose, and he provided the comedic support. And that show had like, you know, 13 listeners or something like that. But really the point of the show is to give us an excuse to eat an unhealthy amount of ice cream. And it was like a fun thing to look back on. So I've created a few shows in the past and have obviously worked with a lot of people. But this one, I think like as a podcast producer and somebody who helps with strategy and all that kind of stuff, I felt like for the 5 years, I guess I'd been in business at that point, like I felt like I needed to have a podcast because I taught other people to podcast. And I felt like, you know, some imposter syndrome around like, oh, who am I to teach people if I don't have one of my own and it's not successful? But part of that just made it like the bar get higher and higher and higher. And I felt like for whatever show I launched, like it's got to be amazing. It's got to rank number one. It's got to grow to like 10,000 listeners within like, you know, however many months and whatever. And that just like kept me from ever starting anything. And so I had dozens and dozens and dozens of show ideas over the years and just like never could pull the trigger on any of them. Cause I was like, but maybe that's not the one. Do I really want to do that for like that long? I know I'm going to need to commit to it for like years for it to be successful. And I just eventually I was like, okay, this is the strategy. I'm doubling down on the health and wellness. I want to talk about marketing. And so like, this is going to be the show. And I'm just going to start it, and I can always quit it. The funny thing is like, I still felt all that pressure about making it successful, but I kind of like, I'd moved past a lot of that and was just like, okay, actually probably the better outcome here is that I can show people that even with all the knowledge in the world, you're still going to have to put in a year or two or three to get this to grow the show. Like that's just how it works. And so I was kind of like, okay, I'm happy to be the example for that and like show that there is no great growth hack that like, you know, week one, you hit the charts and all of a sudden you're just like, you just stay there, top of the charts forever. Like that's just not how podcasting works as an indie creator. If you don't have an existing audience, if you're starting from scratch. And so like that kind of helped me get over it of like, okay, that's going to be like what I want to teach out of this, aside from like the actual topics I was talking about to health and wellness business owners. The funny thing though, was that when I decided to quit the show, then I felt like this resistance to it because I was like, oh man, I feel like it would be easier to quit the show if I'd been doing it for 2 or 3 years. And you just expect, you know, we all change as people over 2 or 3 years. So of course, like it's plausible that I wouldn't want, I've outgrown the show or something. But 6 months in, it felt like, oh, like I feel like it's going to be this public thing that I like made the wrong choice or whatever. And actually shutting down the show, that was like the most freeing, one of the most freeing like things as a creator I'd ever done. Because as soon as I chose to shut it down and like nothing bad happened and I got a lot of support where people were like, yeah, this makes like a lot of sense. Like, and actually your decision to shut this down showed me that I should be shutting down this other thing that's not in alignment with what I want to do. And I was like, oh, that's interesting. And as soon as I did that, I was like, oh man, I have no fear to start anything and quit anything ever again. And so like, I'll start another show. I'll do it for 5 episodes. I'll be like, no, this isn't right. And we'll just scrap it and we'll move on to the next idea. Cause like, I have no shortage of ideas for like podcasts, blogs, newsletters, like all this stuff. And so I'm kind of like, probably I'm only going to find out if it's the right fit once I actually start doing it. And to start doing it, I'm glad I got over that fear of quitting it, which makes it the whole thing kind of way easier to do. So I would say it was such a huge, like, I think I will look back on that, like starting that show and then choosing to quit that show really quickly as like one of the pivotal points for me as a creator.
you can now live forever.
Yeah. Yeah.
You are a god now. Right. You know what's interesting about, like, it's not just the podcast industry, but it seems to be like part of it. You have a newsletter, right? Like, you have to have podcasts no matter what the damn newsletter is about. You know, like, you right. go to, like, let's just say, like, basketball, like the NBA, right? Some of the best newsletter blog writers, they didn't play in the NBA. They may not even play basketball at all. But with the podcasting, it's like, it almost like a rule that is not really a rule, but it seems to, like, everybody thinks it's a rule where, hey, I've got to have a podcast. It's not the case, but.
Yeah. Well, and I think, like, now I've gotten to know, especially mostly through Twitter, because, like, writers tend to congregate on Twitter. But, like, all of these great newsletter writers in the podcasting space. And, like, some of them do have active podcasts right now and some of them don't. But it's kind of like you can be a smart person and talking about an industry or a topic, and writing's actually the best, you know, fit for you. And so I feel like that for me. And so I feel like I love studying podcasting, and the way I'm best able to communicate my thoughts around it is through writing. And so it's like, that's not actually a bad thing. Like, every industry needs, you know, people in a broad variety of mediums contributing in different ways. And, like, it's just a different experience. And it's funny, like, I, as a consumer, have gone through, like, there'll be phases when I just listen to hours of podcasts a day. And then right now I'm kind of like super, like, I don't really listen to any podcasts. I just read everything. And so it kind of like, there's tons of people out there. And I know a lot of podcasters who don't listen to podcasts, but they read. And so it's kind of like, yeah, I've made, I think, more peace with that of, like, okay, I feel like I can contribute something as a writer more than I can as a podcaster at this point. I still have a lot of ideas around podcasts that sound like fun to me, but now I've kind of reached a point where I'm just more selective of, I'm like, okay, the newsletter is my main piece of content. And so any podcast I start has to be like a second class citizen, almost, that it can't take too much time to produce, or it needs to be like a short run, like 10 episode series or something like that, that it's not just this ongoing thing that competes with the newsletter kind of.
So health, that has to be like, something you said, it's more niche down a lot of times, but how did you get so passionate about that? That's not something everybody's passionate in. Certainly not always me, not as much as I should be, at least.
That was part of the problem, was that I was never actually that interested in the health and wellness stuff. And, like, there were things I found interesting about it, but it was just like, it came to me. And I don't know, I think there's different, I was having a conversation with people earlier today about this kind of idea about, like, finding your audience and choosing your audience. And sometimes I think it's a bit different from, like, a content creator versus a business, when you're, like, actively, like, all you're trying to do is sell a product or a service or something. And I feel like with a business, it's almost more tempting, I think, to just take what comes to you, and that's fine. And you can build a great business. And I think some people really don't care. It's just like, okay, whoever I'm making this thing, and whoever wants it, I'm happy to work with you and sell to you and whatever. Whereas I feel like, and, like, I like all the people that I work with and always have, like, have always had really good clients. But I think there was something where I realized, like, to grow the business further, I was going to need to do more marketing. And to do more marketing, I was going to need to, like, I needed to care about the people and their problems and, like, their niche. And I was just like, oh, I don't really know anything about health and wellness, and I don't really care about it that much. And I would way rather talk to, like, kind of like scrappy creators and brands who are like, that's where I'm, like, feel at home and feel like I can just talk with creators and, like, interesting creative brands doing interesting things, like, in, like, tech. I feel like my partner, she works in tech, and so I have a kind of, like, foundation there to talk with people that in that world. And so I was kind of like, oh, these are all the people, like, I can create content for them so much easier. It doesn't feel like I'm forcing it. I just have endless ideas around it. And so I was like, oh, that's probably a sign that I should, like, not be niching and leaning further into health and wellness, where I don't feel that, where, again, it feels like I'm just having to force it, versus somewhere else where I'm feeling more pulled by it. So yeah, the health and wellness stuff, it kind of just, like, fell into my lap and was never something I was really passionate about, but was kind of just like, oh, well, like, I guess we'll go with this. Like, this seems to be working.
You are very resourceful on Twitter and you share a lot of great things. But I think the first time that I really, like, connected with you, we were on a Twitter space or something, and there was a lot of podcasting people in there. And I think all the speakers were actually industry people. I don't remember why. Actually, I do remember why. It was because there was all the news with Spotify, and there was, like, kind of some concern. And this was a discussion group. Yeah. And it was really all industry people talking about it. You know, what's this going to do? And how's the impact going to be on indie podcasters or whatever? And you were, like, very blunt with the statement that you made. Do you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, I think so.
I think he gets the struggle and the grind. So you basically said something along the lines of that it didn't matter to them. A lot of them didn't even know about it, right? I mean, it's irrelevant. So you have a realistic approach to everything. You do.
Yeah, well, I think like, I remember there were two things that I said, but the one that I specifically remember was like, I think the entire podcasting industry could collapse tomorrow and there would be thousands of creators who would still go on using podcasting to make great livings. And like, it would be a bit harder if you rely on advertising, but like a lot of people, it would be like blogging. Like there is no, is there a blogging industry? Maybe there is. I'm not a blogger, but I use a blog for my business and I could get sponsors. Like you don't actually even need, the interesting thing about sponsorships is like the most lucrative sponsorships that I've ever seen are not through any ad marketplaces. They're working one-to-one creator to brand and the creator finding a brand that's saying, you are super aligned with my mission. And so what do you think we team up? And there doesn't need to be an industry to facilitate any of that. That's just two entities like coming together, seeking each other out one way or the other and partnering. And like that's been happening for probably like hundreds or thousands of years in some form or another.
Exactly. Yep.
And so like there's the industry, if it collapsed, like it would affect really big shows and publications and networks and whatever. But for the average indie creator, I don't think it matters at all. I don't think there needs to be an industry per se. I think that there are maybe some benefits, but
Oh, yeah.
I don't know. I've always like been a little like, I don't get why people care about the industry, which I feel sometimes kind of stupid about because I'm like kind of part of the industry. And I'm like, am I missing something here? Like, it's great that there's conferences and stuff like that. And it's great that there's tech companies that help us, you know, create better content more easily and all this stuff. But when I look at like ad marketplaces and a lot of that kind of stuff, I'm like, okay, well, that I have tried to hire podcasts to run ads on through some of those, and I've always had bad experiences. And so a lot of my like interaction with the industry, I just feel like I don't really get what I'm supposed to get out of this. And I feel like it's way more empowering, like as a creator to kind of like, I mean, obviously it's we as creators, like we hopefully have kind of embodied this mentality of like, okay, we kind of need to do things for ourselves and be scrappy. And we need to kind of, there's this like DIY mentality. And like I mentioned, I came up through like punk and hardcore and metal music. And so I think a lot of that for me is like, you feel like there's this identity of being like the reject of the music industry, of this music that nobody understands. And you have to work hard and do it all yourself. And you're playing like, I used to play in a band that we'd play shows to like 30 people. And it's kind of just this like, to me, that's the mentality of a creator where it feels like, yeah, you can do it yourself. And you can, you don't need to rely on the industry to like pick you and put you on the radio, let's say. And I think that that's like, if you make that mentality shift as a creator, I think you're going to open up a lot more opportunities and stop looking at gatekeepers and start like making your own luck and seeking out your own opportunities. And that's, I think, where the best opportunities are.
You're the quick tip master and you provide a lot of good tips that are realistic and obviously quick, but they're achievable and they're realistic, like I just said. How long have you been doing that? I'm just talking about just Twitter here, because I'd personally love to share those and find value in them.
Yeah. Okay. What did, I think I'm on like numbers, I'm in the 70s or 80s. I think I was scheduling out some the 80s today.
Every day or what? How do you, what are you doing there?
So I've been doing them every weekday. And so I was kind of like, this is another, I think there's something I've learned in the past year or two in really taking the creator kind of game more seriously was really like making it manageable on myself. Because like I've been creating something in online in one form or another for like almost 6 years now. And most of those things failed because they didn't feel sustainable. And so that was where kind of when I was talking about the podcast before, that didn't feel sustainable. And so it was almost like the writing was on the wall where I was like, okay, if I'm struggling at 3 or 6 months in, like there's no way I'm getting to like a year or 2 years or 5 years. And it's probably not going to get better. Like I'm not going to enjoy it more then. It's like the process I don't like. It's not that it's not successful. I was even thinking like, what if this was bringing me in new clients all the time? And I would still not like the process. And so why am I doing it? Like, it's still going to feel like a drain. And so I think for me, I like was experimenting with Twitter for a while and I'd like tried a few things. And one of the things that I found about myself is like, I need to have like a through line or like a core concept that like keeps me on focus kind of. And so I don't, it's one less decision every day to like, what am I going to tweet about? And now when the, and so it's like bringing constraints into it, which a lot of people talk about with creativity. And so once I was kind of like, what if I just did a series of like quick podcast tips? And I was like, okay, I could do one of those a day. That feels a lot easier than, yeah, and for some reason, giving it the title quick podcast tip made it easier for me. I could have done it without that title. And I don't know why, but for me, my brain was like, oh, quick podcast tip. That's my like series. It's like a show kind of where it's like every day it has some constraints. It's like going to be mostly in one tweet, sometimes some threads. but I'm going to do it every weekday, try and do one piece of advice in one tweet, and we'll just keep doing it every weekday. And I was like, oh, that's achievable. I can do that. And once my brain was around that, then I was able to like schedule them out, you know, a week at a time or whatever, and easily come up with ideas. And so, yeah, I must have started, what would that be, like 3 or 4 months ago or 5 months ago, something like that. I took a break over Christmas, so it would be a bit longer. But yeah, it's been something like that. And the fascinating thing to me is now I'm at whatever, 75, 80, something like that. And doing it this long, all of a sudden people are starting to like reach out, like people in the podcast industry or like production studios, or like I'm getting interesting people following me and they're subscribing to my newsletter now. And I'm just like, huh, that's really interesting. And I think like I've observed this for every type of content. Like it usually takes like, you need to put out like 100 pieces of content a lot of times before good things start to come your way, it seems. And that's not like a hard and fast rule. But I think there's something where, you know, so many people give up after episode 3 or episode 20. There's so many stats around that. And it's like, you just haven't given yourself enough runway for the good luck to start showing up almost, for you to have enough content out there that, you know, somebody has seen it, you know, because not everybody sees every single piece of content you put out. And so there's something to be said for like, okay, when you've put out 100 pieces of content, there's a way bigger pool of people who have seen 10 of those and are like, oh, this person actually knows what they're talking about this. They haven't seen all 100, but they've seen enough of it to be able to be like, oh, this person's really consistent and they put out good content and like they're clearly like in it for the long game. And I think things just, it feels partly like luck. It feels partly like earned luck almost, but there's something about like sticking with it long enough for good things to happen that I feel like is starting to happen for me now in, you know, around this like 75 to 100 mark of putting those out. So it's been kind of interesting to observe from the inside.
You know, I'm really proud to be an indie podcaster, but I do know one of the things that I have the most difficult time keeping up with is editing this very podcast. It kicks my butt every week, but I will tell you, I did find a solution to this and a team that I can trust to edit my podcast, the team at How's It Podcasting. I met these guys online and I'm not gonna lie, I was a little skeptical at first, right? Like this is my baby. And for me to trust somebody else with it was a really big deal. I did give them a shot and I've just been so satisfied with the results. They understand that you don't have the most amount of money to spend. They have very affordable options to edit your podcast. I do think it'll help you keep your podcast going longer and help you maintain that level of creativity that you're needing, because that needs to be your main focus, is actually creating the content. I want you to reach out to them and give them a shot. How's It Podcasting? So it's H-O-W-Z-I-T Podcasting. On Twitter, you can find them at How's It WP. Same with Instagram, How's It WP. And on Facebook, look up How's It Podcasting. Their email is howsitwp@gmail.com. This will all be in the show notes, no worry. But if you really want to spend that time focusing on the content you're creating and not just spending hours and hours beyond hours editing, I highly encourage you to check out How's It Podcast Editing. You also can see that you're being connected to more content creators, more indie podcasters as well. So you know, obviously they find value in that. And that's probably pretty neat for you as well. So you're now finding yourself meeting people like myself and others, or even newer, or, you know, whatever. So that's got to be pretty cool that like you can be a resource.
Yeah. And it's kind of interesting, like, because I used to run a Facebook group called Cut the Bullshit Podcasting back when Facebook groups were first like blowing up. And that was, I think that grew to about like 2,000 indie podcasters mostly in there. And then, I don't know, something about just Facebook groups, I didn't want to be on there. And so I started like not showing up as much. And then it just kind of devolved into just a, you know, pitch fest all the time. Everybody posting their shit. Yeah. And so then I wanted to go less. And so I kind of like, that was an interesting experience where I was like, that was a bummer, because I spent like 2 years growing that community and then just kind of got burnt out on it, because it takes just so much work to run a community. And I was kind of like, okay, this isn't the thing for me right now. I can't keep this energy up. And I think I got busy with just like actual work stuff. I was like, I can't afford to do like another 10 hours a week just managing this community. And so I kind of left that. And so like I had a lot of experience with indie podcasters then, but coming to Twitter, it was like starting from scratch. And I was like, where is everyone? Like, how do I connect with people? And the other thing about those quick podcast tips that I think relates perfectly to podcasting too, is I think the first 60, I might've got the most likes I ever got on one was like maybe 10 or something like that. And most of them had like, I would say 3 or less likes, no retweets, anything like that. And then it was like in the 60s, just a few weeks ago, 2 in 3 days went kind of like micro viral in the podcasting space. And I was like, well, that was weird. I would never have guessed that those topics would have gone microviral. But now it's like almost every single, maybe not every single one, but a lot more of them have like three or four or five people like consistently retweeting them. And it gives you that boost. And so that again is just like this idea of like, you don't know what's going to like catch on and resonate with people. And you just need to give it enough time span. Like it's probably going to take you more than 50 episodes before, you know, something like strikes a nerve with people and you hit on something and, you know, it gets shared broadly or whatever that is. And maybe it's going to take even more than that. But I think for me, like that's just the thing as a creator myself that I always like just keep telling myself and reinforcing. And then also, you know, teach to podcasters is like more than anything, like there are strategies and tactics and all this stuff, but persistence is probably like the greatest skill you can have.
Yeah. Logical persistence, I guess. Some persistence is just absurd, right. But nevertheless.
Yeah, that can be caveated for sure. Yeah.
But you're on your second win though. That's awesome. I've been glad to connect with you. And I think one thing I've learned on Twitter the last 10 months is like, you never know who's watching. Like you said, like I've had people like Mark Asquith reach out to me directly and stuff. And I'm like, how does this guy even know or come across me in the first place? Like, I'd only been on Twitter for a few months. And then it made me think, like, you never know who's watching and you never know who you can network and connect with.
I had this exact experience where there was someone who reached out to me about a month ago through Twitter, someone who I recognized their name, but didn't know anything about them or their company really. Like, I recognized the company too. But he reached out just through DMs. We'd never engaged, I don't think, at all. And he basically made me a job offer that was like, once I started digging, was like a six-figure job offer. And I was like, wait, what just happened here? And I was like, you know, I'm excited to run my own thing and didn't want to take a job. But I was like, that's kind of cool. Like, what? And I've like never talked to this person before. Clearly, he's just been like reading these same tweets and stuff. And he was like, yeah, we're basically looking for like, I would love to clone you and have you like, I know you're not interested, but I would just love to clone you and have you like take over our marketing team. And I was like, well, that's a cool thing to like, that's a nice piece of validation kind of from someone like who I would be intimidated by in the industry kind of and look up to as someone who's like way ahead of me. And I was like, wow, yeah, you just really have no idea. They might not be engaging with your content, not liking it, not sharing it, whatever. And there's always somebody watching, which is kind of a cool experience.
Before I get into like put you on the spot here in a little bit, I do want to ask you about what it's like working in the industry. Like you just said, like a six-figure job or whatever. I think there might be a misconception that a lot of these positions and stuff are like really, really high paid.
Mm-hmm.
Talking with Brian Barletta, other people like that, there is a real struggle and you have to be very passionate about it to do something like this. He talked about like no real damn health insurance and other examples like that, or just some people in the salary in general, like it's just like podcasting itself. These aren't positions that are instantly six-figure, seven-figure positions, and you really have to enjoy it to continue to do it.
Yeah. So my only real, I guess I worked a few real jobs, but never in like a corporate context or anything like that. My last job before getting into podcasting was as a landscaper, and before that as a tree planter in Northern Canada. So I've worked some like odd jobs and stuff like that, but I've never worked in like in a corporation or anything like that. And so that's partly, I feel like so kind of alienated by that world. I don't really know what that's like. And so when people either complain about it or like talk about great opportunities in it, I'm like, oh, I can't really relate to that. And so I've always, since I've been in podcasting and really since I've been like doing what I would consider like a real career, it's been kind of my self-employed. The interesting thing to me too was podcasting was so, I've like learned to love it so much. But at the start, I mean, I loved it as a listener, but it was an opportunistic kind of thing of like, oh, I went to audio engineering school, so I can edit people's podcasts way better than they can. I already have the skills and I want to have a location independent business, work online. And so I can just put these two things together and was able to get started in podcasting and kind of like have fallen in love with various elements of it over the years. So like first I loved editing people's shows, getting to like learn things and get paid for it. That was really cool. Then as I started to grow a team, I was like, oh, actually I really like managing and building a team and like thinking about team culture and all that kind of stuff. And then it kind of the next thing it moved on to was the marketing side of things. And so it's funny now, like my identity right now is strangely because the agency is still the large majority of my income, but my identity is so much more tied up in being a creator than an agency owner, which is kind of strange, but it's just like where my interest has gone into entirely like I think of myself as a writer much more than any other kind of like identity. I would say like a writer and a marketer is where I feel like, oh yeah, that feels like it describes like what I like to do kind of. I have always kind of felt like an outsider from the industry because I've never really kind of like we were talking about before, never like got it and never understood, like, I guess my business is a part of it, but I feel like I work with creators mostly, and they have their own businesses generally, but they're not big companies for the most part. We've worked with some brands and things like that, and that's always been good, but it still has just felt like this little bubble almost. And so I don't know how much I can speak to, you know, what it's like being a part of the industry, because I don't think I've ever like felt like I really have been. It always has felt like I'm just like creating stuff, whether that's like creating the Facebook group, the community for podcasters, whether that's like building this agency and doing like one-to-one service work for people, or now with my like courses and stuff, it's like I'm working with indie podcasters there. It's like creating a thing to help indie podcasters market their shows better and grow their shows better, regardless of the industry. And there's like some things that touch on like how you can leverage, you know, parts of the industry sometimes. But like the thing I'm most excited about is just this idea of like being an independent creator and helping other people do that too.
That's a good answer, man. I love that. Nevertheless, though, and it's not even just an industry thing, a self-employment thing is a challenge, right?
Yeah,
and I think that's where a lot of the people in the industry are.
Yeah, you look at people. I talked to Brian, like you mentioned, last week for the first time and connected with him. And I mean, it seems like he's doing pretty well with the newsletter.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, the newsletter is fantastic and like such a valuable resource. Amazing. Especially for people who are more in the industry, although I think it's helpful for a lot of creators to understand a lot of what he writes about as well. But it is relevant to creators, because if a goal of yours is to make a living as a full-time creator, you have to treat it as a business. So you need to start to learn some things about what type of business you're in. And so one of the things that I think about a lot for podcasters is like, and I mentioned this before at the start, I had no idea that I was building an agency. And once I was building an agency, all of a sudden a bunch of things clicked into place. Now I could actually look up like, oh, this is how agencies typically structure themselves with team. This is how they market themselves. This is how big their profit margin should be, or like things like this, where all of a sudden I felt like I was just lost in the middle of nowhere. And realize like, oh, there's actually kind of a roadmap here that I can follow, and I don't need to make it all up myself. And so I think for podcasters, depending on how you plan on monetizing or building living off your show, whether that's through selling products, like that's one type of business model, or whether you're looking to go the ad route, like then you're in a publishing business model. And so starting to look up like, okay, what is a publishing business model? And actually that's been around for hundreds of years through newspapers and like books and all these things. Like there's a long history that we can all learn from and see like, oh, people have figured this out already. I don't need to do it all myself. And I can start tapping into that knowledge to, you know, skip steps and accelerate that process. And so, yeah, understanding the business model you're pursuing, understanding how the podcast fits into that, that's a super important part of it. But then also kind of just understanding timeframes around it. And you'll always see, you know, some people just like really quickly, like Ryan's a great example. He's like had a lot of success really quickly with his newsletter. And some other people like in other types of business models or other niches or whatever it is, like it just takes a lot longer. And so for me, like I always tell people, like some people are inclined to like do the burn the boat strategy. And like, I'm going to quit my job and I'm going to go 100% in on this. And I'm going to give myself, I've got 6 months runway. And, you know, I'm going to try and make this creator thing work. Maybe I don't have the like guts for that, but I think it's a way better approach to like build the thing on the side and like get it to the point where it's, you know, close to equaling your day job income, or you're like, it's a significant percentage of it. And where you're at the point where you're like, okay, if I had an extra 30 or 40 hours a week, like I could easily 100% confident I could get this up to at least making what I am now, if not more. And so like, that's what I did when I went full-time on podcast editing at the start. Like it was kind of like 2 months in a row where I'd made as much from podcast editing as I had from my day job in like half the time. I was like, okay, I think this is the time to make that jump, and I'm going to be able to make this work better with more time. And so I think for creators too, like I think you can ruin a creative pursuit by putting too much pressure on it to perform too quickly, because so much of making a living as a creator is about generosity and like sharing content, you know, freely with your audience and educating and whatever it is that you're doing. And when you start to like need to bring in income, you start looking to cut corners and you start looking to do things differently. You have these different motivations behind it, and you can kind of really undermine a lot of the trust that you've built. And I've just seen a lot of people rush to monetize too quickly, put too much pressure on their creative work, and it kind of implodes the what could have been a possibly successful business. And so, yeah, I'm way more of a slow approach, kind of like take it steady and, you know, a more measured approach to making that leap over.
More realistic too. I know for me, it's like you've got kids, you've got...
Yeah.
We'd all love to just make that leap of faith and there'd be no consequences, but you have to be smart about it for sure. We have to get you back on here, man, for a whole episode on tips. I think that would be incredible. But let's do this, man. Have you on the spot here. You know a little bit about who this audience is, obviously. I'm going to let you pick one tip that you think's, I'm not going to say the most valuable, but extremely valuable that you're going to share with us today? A little bit of detail. I got you on the spot here. Can you handle that?
Yeah. Okay. I can handle that. I can think of lots of tips and I'm trying to think through which is my favorite. One of the things I think about as for, I've stopped really using the word podcasters and in favor of creators, because I think one of the things you start looking at successful creators and they are not just one thing. So a lot of people have a Twitter following that's not just about sharing their podcasts on there. They're like sharing valuable native Twitter content. And they also have a newsletter and they also have a podcast. And this is really overwhelming for anyone who's doing their show on the side as a hobby right now. But I think it's worth starting to think about yourself as a multi kind of platform creator. And that's the thing to aspire to at some point. Because I think one of the frustrating things is like podcasting is, from a lot of people I've talked to who've grown audiences on multiple platforms, podcasting is the single hardest platform to grow an audience on. Which means, for me at least, what I take away from that is that as podcasters, we kind of need to build audiences elsewhere as well and bring them back to the podcast. And that's where they're really going to build up that trust and that know, like, and trust factor. And so if we are ever like selling anything to them or we are going to advertisers, like we're going to have this really loyal audience here. But we probably need to get awareness about us and our podcast somewhere else. And so I think thinking of yourself as not just a podcaster, but as a creator, someone who does things. Like, I think one of the dangers of thinking about yourself as a podcaster is then you treat every social platform or your newsletter or whatever it is just as an opportunity to promote your podcast, when really there's an opportunity to create things that are valuable in their own right. And it's possible to do that. Like, I was just thinking about this today. And actually, this is a great example. This will be a new tip at some point. So I was thinking about if I had a podcast, what I would do is make each of my quick podcast tips on Twitter like a segment at the end of that podcast. But I wouldn't share that as like an audiogram or a video. I would just share it on Twitter still as the native tweet. But here, I've kind of like, I'm just taking two things. Like, it's the idea that's interesting about it and that's valuable. But on Twitter, it's its own native content. It's not just like resharing the podcast, trying to get people back to it. I wouldn't even post about the podcast when I was sharing it on Twitter. I just share those like same quick podcast tips on Twitter. But that would also be like a segment of my show, kind of. And so I could maybe every so often on Twitter, I'd say like, you know, add an extra tweet. And say, you know, if you want to hear me go into more depth on this, you know, I do a 5-minute riff on it at the end of my latest episode. You can go check it out here. And so I think that's when you start thinking about it that way, I think you start approaching each platform that you're active on as its own unique thing and not just an excuse to like self-promote your stuff. And it's about like making that platform valuable in its own right, whether that's a newsletter or, you know, a Twitter series that you're doing or something like that. And that everything can kind of supplement itself, not just be like endlessly repurposed from one thing. And so I think that's one of the things that I think there's a lot of opportunity for, like, quote unquote, podcasters to kind of expand their idea of themselves as into like multi-platform kind of creators.
Yeah, exactly. And there's a lot of other things that's content besides podcasts. So, I mean, utilizing that is, there's nothing wrong with that, right? Like, I remember talking with Agent Palmer a while back and he talked about that with blogging, right? He's like, a lot of times I write about like a conversation that we had before we hit record.
Yep.
You know what I mean? Something like that. And that creates more content. You know, you're a creator. So that's a great point that you bring up there. And that's just, that adds more stuff out there for people to discover as well. I mean, everybody wants to talk about discoverability being an issue. We could talk about that all night, right? Everybody has a different opinion. But I don't think anybody's going to argue the fact that the more good stuff you're creating is out there, the better, for sure.
Yep.
Oh man, I appreciate you taking the time down there in Mexico to jump on this with me. What time is it there?
We're on Central Time, so it's 6 p.m. right now, so not too different probably from anyone in the States.
Sun is still shining though.
I've got like a light, like I think it's called Elgato Key Light. And so it's kind of like for YouTubers, I guess, but at the start of the pandemic, this is interesting to some before. So I was starting to create my course, Podcast Marketing Academy. And one of the things that had kept me from creating a course for literally 5 years was because I was traveling, if I'm going to create videos, it's always going to be different backgrounds. It's going to feel not professional. It's going to be like all this different stuff. It's not going to look like I want it to, especially as someone who like is a techie kind of guy with video and audio and stuff like that. And so I was like, finally made the compromise to myself. I was like, okay, we're going to be here. We were in Scotland at the time. And I think things were locking down. I already knew I was going to create the course. I was like, okay, we're going to be here for like long enough for me to record this course. And I got to get myself over this hump of like poor production quality. So I bought myself like a Logitech webcam, which is way better than the MacBook Pro built-in camera, and this light. And I was like, oh, okay, this looks professional enough now that I can get over my like self neuroses or whatever they are. And was like, this looks good enough to do. And then I could like record the course. And because I had like a consistent like background, the same office every day and the camera and the light. And so now I've been like lugging around all this like stuff for years. This light is like a huge thing. It's not super heavy, but I've got like the SM7B mic, which is a heavy mic. There was one time I stopped doing this now, but for like 3 years, I carried around this like cast iron mic stand that was like for a bass drum mic stand. And it must have weighed like 10 or 15 pounds. And I lugged this all around the world for 3 years as my microphone stand. Now I've got this, I kind of did some customizations to this GorillaPod, which if you're watching on audio or listening on audio, you can't see. But it's like one of those flexible camera tripods because I was already carrying that because I'm also into photography. But I was like, I think I can modify this that I can carry my mic as well. And then I can ditch that 15 pound cast iron mic stand that I've been lugging around for 3 years, and it actually worked out. So yeah, I've got all the gear with me.
Well, man, again, I have a hell of a lot of respect for you, and I appreciate you taking the time to chat with me. So definitely be in touch. I appreciate you, man.
Yeah. Well, thanks so much for, reaching out. I think you reached out initially through Twitter and then invited me to have me on the show. I mean, it's always fun to chat on Twitter and even more fun to chat face-to-face, at least through Riverside.
Hey, wrap this up, man. Tell us where to find all your great stuff that you're doing. I want everybody to check it out.
Yeah. So I created just a custom page with all the best stuff, best places to find me. You can find that at counterweightcreative.co/podcastfather, all one word there. So if you head there, you can find out how to connect with me on Twitter and Instagram. The couple of newsletters that I write are there as well. I've also got a free course on podcast sponsorships. And so if you're interested in that, you can find that there as well. And that's a kind of 5-lesson course that will walk you through high ticket sponsors, even with a small audience, which is something that a lot of our clients have had a lot of success with. And now a lot of the students have as well. So would love to have you involved with that.
We'll have it in the show notes. Thanks again, man.
Awesome. Yeah. Thank you so much for having me on.
Thanks for listening and thanks for telling a friend. But more importantly, thank you for supporting independent content creators. I hope you enjoyed this episode and continue to listen to the upcoming ones. I'm really trying to do something special here by highlighting all the amazing things all these amazing content creators are doing. I hope you continue to join me on my journey. I'm Jeff, aka Podcast Father, the Indie Podcaster. Keep being you. Keep being great. Thank you.